Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
Welcome to another episode of Axe of the Blood God, US Gamer's official RPG podcast. I'm your host, Kat Bailey. With me, as always, my lovely co-host, Nadia Oxford.
Hello, everybody. Hope you're doing well out there.
Nadia, have you already begun playing Red Dead Redemption 2?
I am so on the fence about that. It might even change my mind by the time this podcast goes up, but every time I think I want to play it, something kind of deters me. Like, for example, I was looking over Mike's article about realistic hunting, and it's like, whoa, that's not very Oregon Trail at all, is it? Where you just kind of shoot the buffalo, and it goes, you know, kind of legs up, and that's all you have to see.
Yeah, I was a little taken aback, because I thought that the skinning the monsters in Monster Hunter World was a little intense, and in this one, it's like, no, you're going to sit there and watch as he's brutally skinning this thing and carrying it, and it's just like, and you're shooting it in the leg, and it's like falling around, you're going, holy, whoa, okay, this is a little intense. Look, yeah, I grew up in a city that had a pretty strong hunting culture. As you can tell, I am not a hunter. I do not like to hunt. I do not hunt the cute animals. So,
yeah, I can't really say, like, Jews have a very strong hunting culture either, so it's never something I ever grew up with in any respect whatsoever. I respect hunters who go within, like, those limits, those legal limits, because I figure, okay, if you're going to be a meat eater like myself, I don't exactly have the right to say, hey, you know, it's really brutal what you're doing. Like, I'm not into sport hunting, don't get me wrong, but if you kill what you eat, then I can't exactly say, well, you know, no, you're a terrible person. But on the other hand, I don't really want to play a video game where you skin things.
Oh, no, I'm not judging people who are actual hunters, for sure. I mean, it's a sport. They're doing a maybe kind of a civic good in keeping the herds of deer relatively thinned. But as for sitting in a tree stand with a beer and a gun on a cold, windy day, perhaps that is not my favorite activity. I'd rather be playing a video game, and I'm not going to be skidding. I'm a city girl, sorry. But
yeah,
I was going to play Red Dead Redemption 2 yesterday, but I made a critical error.
You went back to Monster Hunter World?
No. Though I kind of want to at times, because there's that behemoth hunt that I never got around to doing.
Oh, yes.
No, I stupidly didn't think about the fact that there's a data disk that you have to actually install the game with. So consequently, I stuck it in and had to wait like another couple hours before I could actually boot it up. And by that time, I was ready to go to bed. So while I waited, I played Persona 5 instead.
Oh, that was a good choice.
Yes, I think so. I'm going to talk about that briefly. I think we're going to talk a little bit about Fallout 76. And then for this one, in honor of Red Dead Redemption 2, we're going to share our favorite RPG cowboys, of which there were more than I thought. There were at least five.
And at least, yes.
And some of them are what you would call cowboys. Some of them are maybe not cowboys, actually, but at least dress like them. So yeah,
they want to be cowboys.
There aren't a ton of Westerns in this world, like RPGs that would be categorized as Westerns. We talked about Wild Arms the other day.
Right.
But funnily enough, there are no characters from Wild Arms in this list because none of them are really cowboys.
Yeah, that's the funniest thing. Like, to be fair, I'm not as familiar with other Wild Arms beyond one, but when you look at Jack, Cecilia, and Rudy from the first game, and even some of the NPCs, you have Calamity Jane, but even she doesn't have a cool hat. But none of them do, actually.
And yeah, and as we all know, you gotta have a cool hat in order to
be no hat,
cowboy.
No cowboy.
No hat, no cowboy. Those are the rules that I just made up.
And those are the rules brewed up by a city girl.
But maybe Wild Arms XF has a cool cowboy. I'm not sure. But if you want to help us out with this one, drop us a line at me@cat.bailey@usgamer.net or leave us a comment on the show notes. You can find us on social media at the over on US Gamer Net. I'm on Twitter at the underscore catbot. Nadia is on Twitter at Nadia Oxford. And yeah, like whenever we get a comment, we try to read them on the show. And if you really like the show, make sure to subscribe. Okay.
Please.
So first things first, Fallout 76, the beta. I got a chance to play it, Nadia. Uh-huh. And the article I ended up writing was how friggin' weird it is that they decided to make a Fallout game that's mostly about the combat when actually the combat in Fallout isn't very good.
Combat in Fallout has never been its strength, has it?
No, I would say not. It brought me back to Fallout 4 when I was playing the Nuka World DLC. And in the Nuka World DLC, to refresh your memory, it's mostly an extended dungeon crawl through a parody of Disney World, where you're killing a lot of robots and raiders, and that's kind of it. Like, there isn't a ton of story. And I didn't really care for the Nuka World DLC, so it made me feel a little perturbed that in Fallout 76, I was getting those kinds of memories.
Yeah, did you have a chance to really look at any of the story material lying around? Because, like I said in my preview, it's not really active storytelling so much as passive.
Yeah, I mean, but at the same time, it's the story isn't that interesting, at least not at the outset, because it's like there's an overseer, and I guess you're just kind of going toward her next audio log. With, you know, you're going from town to town chasing her audio logs, and she's talking about some kind of horrifying plague that's taken over West Virginia.
Right, and it's probably the Scorched, I guess.
The Scorched. And yeah, as you are walking from town to town, you see people who are dead, and they all have audio logs as well. And so you can hear their stories by listening to it, or you can see, like, the little messages that were left on terminals and stuff. But as we've discussed already, there's, like, kind of none of the you know, elements where you're talking to other people. So I just think as a natural consequence, the combat has to kind of come to the fore. And it's sort of every bit as janky as usual.
That's a good description of it, I guess. Yeah, and you see what I mean about the VATS being kind of a glorified auto-targeting system.
Yes, it is definitely basically auto-aiming. Initially, it was kind of weird to get the hang of, but I've eventually kind of found that if I just stood still, then I could just go bam, 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 and then they were dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that it would have worked for them to have the ultra slow motion in a multiplayer game, obviously.
No, they couldn't do that.
But they're trying to go for some kind of weird compromise where they're not willing to make a full-blooded action game like Destiny. But it's, so they're sticking with this kind of weird hybrid turn-based thing where it's pretty obvious that they really just want to do an action game.
Yeah.
But they're afraid to abandon that.
Yeah. No, you're right about the word compromise. For me, and this is something I said in my preview, the strength of the game for me was walking just through the environments and getting to see, like, you know, explore things and see the weather and stuff like that. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah. I thought initially that I was like, oh, this must be like Rust, like a simpler version of Rust, but, you know, in the Fallout verse. And now it feels kind of like more like Destiny, I suppose, in just in the sense of, well, yes, Destiny is the only multiplayer RPG shooter I've ever played. No.
Of course.
But, I mean, just the fact that you're walking through this world and then all of a sudden an event starts up and monsters are coming or robots are coming and you gotta work with other players to take them down, and then you gather up a whole bunch of loot and stuff and you can use that to craft new weapons, and I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, this is like basically kind of Destiny-ish. Maybe at the end there will be raids, and I can't imagine doing a multiplayer raid in this game because the combat is so janky. It's a weird game. It's very weird.
Did you play it with anyone or just by yourself?
No, I hate other people.
Well, we've established that, haven't we?
Yes. No, I went primarily solo, and in fact, I was taking perks, solo perks, for just that reason. Which there are perks that you can take that will deliberately enhance your abilities if you aren't planning on teaming up with other players.
Right.
But I ended up camping in the woods like a weirdo hobbit person. And that was kind of fun. Like, I had my little cooking area and a little chair and a sleeping bag, and I wasn't able to build anything beyond just the cooker because I don't know where to get gears. I guess I'm going to get gears later, but so I haven't been able to build any of the crafting benches or anything. And until I'm able to do that, I'm not entirely willing to go crazy building a big elaborate structure.
Right.
But then my immediate thought was, why would I bother building big elaborate structures?
Yeah, because you don't have the NPCs that you can populate them with.
Yeah, I mean, there's that. And, well, it seems like a vanity thing, right? Where I would only use resources to build an actual building if I wanted to show off.
And there's not really many people to show off to. Although you built things and
I could show it to my friends, but I mean,
you built things in No Man's Sky.
Yeah, but in No Man's Sky, the way that the base building is developed, you have to have a building.
Right?
You have to have an actual building to be able to put down different things that you can actually use.
Right, okay.
Whereas you have to have actual buildings to be able to, say, like, invite NPCs who are kind of the merchants or whatever working inside your base. And you have, like, you know, a landing pad that you attach to it. So the building of the base actually makes a little bit more sense. Whereas in Fallout 76, I was sort of inclined just to find a clearing and drop down some crafting benches and stuff. I suppose a little later I could, I don't know, in Fallout 4 I had a water farm where I would go and collect tons of water and sell it, and I got lots of money as a result. I could see a situation where I would want to build structures so that I could protect the water farm if it is indeed possible to build one of those in Fallout 76.
I think it might be.
As for having actual buildings, it just... I don't know. I don't know if, like, there's a reason for me to spend all my time doing that, so.
I get to find out when the game comes out.
The other thing that was fun about Fallout 4 was that I would take over, like, established buildings. Like, I would take over the lighthouse, or I would take over that one gas station, or I would take over that one town. Whereas in this one, I don't feel like I can take over a town.
Right. I don't know if you can or not.
Yeah, I don't know either, so. It's all a little confusing. I mean, I didn't hate my time with it. It's pretty, and
yeah, it is.
I like walking through the wilderness, and I enjoyed listening to the kind of 1920s-ish country and the remix of Ghost Riders in the Sky and that kind of thing. But
nice.
And the combat, you know, wasn't horrible.
It's serviceable.
It feels like a weird thing to build a multiplayer game around. And then it was so weird, I would be exploring a building, and I'm so conditioned to expect to be alone. So I would hear footsteps, and I would immediately tense up because I was expecting an enemy to round the corner. And instead, it would be just some random person.
Oh, so you actually came across people.
Oh, yeah. I came across many people.
Oh, interesting.
They were everywhere. I never felt like I was actually alone because there were always people running around.
Oh, okay. Because, yeah, when just one of the things the Bethesda developers tried to kind of instill in us is like, no, don't worry, you're probably never going to see anyone. And, well, it sounds like you saw people.
Oh, yeah, I saw a ton of people, especially once I came right out of the vault for the first time. Maybe that won't be the case. Like, I was starting literally at the same time as everybody else.
Oh, yeah, that could be one of the reasons why you saw people.
So we were all on the same path at the same time. And there were points where, like, I was literally standing and waiting for somebody to finish working, using the friggin' workbench.
Yes, that's always great. Just like everyone is kind of standing in line waiting. Mom said it's my turn. Move.
I was like, come on, come on. I need to break down my materials. Let's go.
Get a move on. Cash in all your junk.
I definitely expect to play Fallout 76, and maybe I will enjoy it. It's just, I don't know. I'd kind of rather just have a real Fallout game.
I'm sure one is coming, if not for a while, of course. They got to give us
Next
decade, if we're lucky, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be a while. So we're not going to get one until after Elder Scrolls 6. Like, we're going to get Starfield or whatever, and then Elder Scrolls 6, and then Fallout 5 will be somewhere way down there.
I forgot about Starfield, but yeah, I was having dinner with one of the developers on Fallout 76. They were sitting at our table, and I said, so, are you working on Elder Scrolls 6? And he just gave me a look.
Ah, geez, Nadia.
He was a good sport about it, though.
That's good tact there.
I'm very tactful.
I'm actually looking forward to Starfield. I expect it will be good. Maybe it'll finally be the game that I've always been dreaming of, wherein I actually get a ship and I actually have interesting things to do in a solar system. Cough, cough, No Man's Sky.
Keep hanging on to that dream.
Though apparently there's a Halloween event going on. There's a Halloween event going on for friggin' everything at this point.
There is, yeah. PUBG and Fortnite.
Yeah. And Fire Emblem. But apparently there's a Halloween event happening in No Man's Sky as well called The Abyss. And I was like, well, maybe. Pause. Nah.
I like that.
I find the building in that game actually kind of tedious, like the gathering and building. So I was kind of like, maybe I'll come back to it when they have the next really big content drop. But at this point, it's just a time sink.
Yeah,
so.
Honestly, like for me, Starlink, I haven't had a chance to go back to it very much, but it is pretty much what I want for No Man's Sky. So
yeah, but nobody cares about Starlink.
I don't know. I don't know what the sales are like, but I know a lot of people liked it.
Apparently not too great.
Oh, that's too bad.
But
it's the best Star Fox you're going to get for a while.
Another time sink in my life right now is Persona 5, which I suppose, are we going to do a Persona 5 update? I don't know if I'm going to keep playing after this week. Not because I don't like it.
Uh-huh.
Mostly because I just don't have time right now because I'm going to be playing. I need to pick up some Red Dead Redemption 2 and at least get some way into it before I go back to Persona 5. Okay.
Yeah, I should probably play it too.
Quick update on Persona 5. It's the summer holidays now. And by the way, if like you don't want Persona 5 spoilers, then I don't know, fast forward like 5 minutes. So it's the summer holidays now. I finished the bank. That's all done. And I finally got to meet Futaba. Is that her name?
Oh, yeah. Futaba.
Glasses Girl?
Yes, Glasses Girl.
Yeah, so like they finally showed her doing the hacking thing because I guess I'm being targeted by Anonymous now or 4chan or something.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, there was this whole thing going on where like they were like a group was reveal yourself, Phantom Thieves, or we'll do. They threatened you somehow. I can't remember how.
Yeah, they're threatening to destroy the Japanese economy. So at this point, Persona 5 is just ticking off every single like crazy group in this country, in this world. They've done school teachers who are abusing kids. They've done charlatan art people who are in pop culture. They did the Yakuza, and now they're doing Anonymous. I'm expecting the final boss to be Donald Trump at this point.
I think
the final dungeon's going to be a mega rally.
There's just so much about that game that reflects the real world, and it's depressing to think about.
Yes, it feels very timely. But so, yeah, I'm looking forward to taking down Anonymous because, they are Legion, but apparently I can change their heart somehow. But Futaba seems cool. Her story seems very heartbreaking and, like, desperately sad, and it touches on the real problem that Japan has with suicide, which is depressing, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And also, she is a shut-in, which yes. I didn't know. Which, when I was living in Japan, shut-ins were a gigantic topic of conversation because while it wasn't necessarily new, it felt like it kind of was in the public consciousness in a big way at that point, like for the first time.
In the media for a lot for the first time.
Hey, are you familiar with the whole shut-in culture?
Yes, I forget the Japanese name for the actual shut-ins, but he, something with an H, but yeah, I am familiar with it.
Yeah, they usually call them neets. Jinx. Yeah, it's really pretty amazing where they really aren't coming out of the room. They're basically just getting, you know, food through a slot in their door from their parents. And they get to be in, like, their 40s or something like that. It's pretty wild.
Yeah, so. And I learned maybe one of the reasons it actually became more of a topic recently is because, well, the parents, the people who were taking care of them, they're getting older. Dying. They're dying. Yeah. Like, what do they do?
In touching on the shut-ins, I remarked the last time I was talking about Persona 5 about how it kind of touches on all of the kind of alternative cultures and things that are happening in Tokyo at any given time.
Right.
Disgraced politicians, journalists, transgender folk, the Shinjuku red light district, on and on. Apparently anonymous now and hacking culture. And yep. Now we've got a shut-in. And
you're not done yet. You're halfway through.
It's not done. Yeah, I'm in. I like her dungeon already. It's a pyramid.
Yeah, it's a pyramid. I remember that. Had great music, as I recall.
The last two dungeons had good music. The bank also had good music.
Yeah, it was a great soundtrack. I'm a little sad that it lost out to Nier in the Game Awards, but those are two really good soundtracks side by side.
Absolutely. But, I mean, of course, she deliberately asks you to change her heart because she, like, I guess she can't deal with the judgment and the horror and the depression of losing a parent in such a horrifying way. So,
yeah, she's got a lot of issues you have to help her out with.
Yeah, for sure. So, it's a good twist on the let's bring justice to all of the bad people so far. It's a good change of pace. And it's been interesting going into her dungeon for the first time where she's kind of helping you, but she's also kind of pushing you away.
Yes.
And it's a bit on the nose, but the pyramid being a metaphor for resurrection, but also a tomb. Like, it was a pretty chilling line when she said, this room will be my tomb.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that.
I was like, whoa. I mean, and I'm sure that she really believed that.
Yeah, so, absolutely. We were just talking about people who never come out.
Yeah, depression is for her, it's depression rather than just an inability to completely engage with the outside world. And she is consequently just completely shut down. And I mean, depression is a pretty intense and a pretty gnarly thing. And
it is, yeah. And she's depressed. And she also, some people have pointed out she shows signs of autism as well.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah, it's just what other people have said, and I can, you'll kind of see more as you get to know her, but yeah, I can see that being the case.
Yeah, it was a good moment the first time you sneak into the house to try and see if you can find her, and like the lights flash, and then you just see her glasses like reflecting the light. And then she freaks out and runs back into her room.
Yes. That's actually, thinking about it, just the whole thing with Futaba also kind of makes you a little more sympathetic to the guardian you have. What's his name? Coffee house guy.
Oh, Sojiro?
Sojiro, yeah. Because he starts the game as a total asshole. And it's like, he's like, oh, I'm doing you a big favor by taking you in. And you can't leave your attic. And it's like, okay, thanks, dude. I'm going to lock you in tonight. Well, good night.
Well, it turns out that he took somebody else in.
Yep. Yeah, he's pretty cool.
He took her in, and he obviously cares about her, but at the same time, he seems to be completely at a loss as to actually help her.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, I really started feeling for him by that point in the game.
Which, I think the fact that he feels like he has no support systems whatsoever to be able to actually get her out of her room. And I
wonder if that's also another commentary on Japanese culture, how they don't really handle mental issues as well as they could, like depression and autism and what have you.
Well, I wouldn't know on that front. I only know what I've heard, perhaps, but at least from the game's perspective, that was the feeling I got, that he just felt completely helpless. And because he's like, leave her alone. Like,
yeah,
she's stuck in there. She's stuck in her own head, and I don't want to hurt her anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. He has no one to really turn to.
So yeah, I'm enjoying it. Though I feel like I'm on that. I've got a serious case of FOMO going on with Persona 5 right now because I feel like I'm so behind on different personas, confidants. Like every day I got somebody else going, hey, why don't you help me build up my social link? And I'm like, I want to do that, but I also want to do all of this other stuff.
Yeah, that's the one problem I had with Persona 5. I don't even know if I can call it a problem. I just remember, you know, I had all these things I should have done and I could have done, but I went fishing day after day. And I caught some really great fish, but I had no girlfriend.
I've never gone fishing. I don't even know how to go fishing.
Oh, you might not be able to, you know, you might not have unlocked it yet, but you can go fishing in one of the old Tokyo moats, which I was like, oh my god, you can go fishing in a moat in Japan? That is amazing, like the old Edo castles and stuff like that. It's cool. Like, oh, that's a thing? That's a real thing? Oh, I'm so jealous. So I'm like fishing. I don't have a girlfriend. Game's over. I'm like, oh, shit.
Wow, you didn't have a girlfriend?
No, like I told you last time, I was propositioned by the goth doctor, and I really regret not taking that proposition because I was really going after Makoto. But to get Makoto, you have to have a really high charm, and I didn't have a high enough charm, so I'm trying to desperately take these baths day after day, and I still didn't have enough time.
The more baths I take,
I went to, I went to the hot springs every day, and it wasn't good enough. Not even the springs; it was just like the neighborhood hot tub, whatever you would call it.
That's the problem with these kinds of games. Like you want to get together with a particular character, but it ends up being a case of you don't know how to do it unless you have a guide, because there are very specific things that you have to, requirements that you have to meet. I remember in Persona 4, like, you had to join certain clubs to get certain social ranks. You had to have certain personality traits, like, at a certain level. You had to take certain jobs to be able to meet certain characters.
Yeah, I didn't meet the holder of the Tower Arcana. I didn't meet him until, like, the very end of the game. The little prick I had to tutor, like, he's literally called, like, wow, you're a little prick. That's what the protagonist says to him. But I didn't meet him until the end of the game.
There's this fortune teller in Shinjuku that I saw her name pop up on the list of confidants that people were talking to. I'm like, who? So I looked her up, and I was like, what? And so I went and found her, and I discovered that you have to have 100,000 yen to give to her to be able to get her quest going, and I only had like 50,000, so I went and did a whole bunch of mementos so that I could get more money, and then you have to go and do her memento to be able, and I'm like, is this really worth it?
Yep, no poor people allowed, Kat.
But, okay, so that's where I am in Persona 5 right now. I'm in the dungeon, I chased the thief in the pyramid, through the town near the pyramid, and I've opened up the alternate exit at this point, so I'm ready to really start delving in deeply into that pyramid. But I'm really enjoying it. But at this point, I feel like I need to step aside for a moment to play some RDR2, so I might not be able to talk about it next week. One more game that I'm playing at the moment that is also distracting me is Diablo 3 on Switch.
Oh, yeah. I have a code for that. I want to download it this weekend and play it, because I've never played Diablo 3, so I'm looking forward to this.
Yes, I can't actually talk about it right now, because when this episode comes out, the review embargo still won't be up. But please look for it at Tuesday at 9 a.m. Pacific. I have thoughts. That are related to Diablo 3. It's not going to be a full review, but I'm going to talk about like what I am enjoying about it, and perhaps what I'm not enjoying about it. You'll have
That's
to see.
Fair.
Check it on usgamer.net. In the meantime, Nadia, let's talk about our favorite RPG cowboys, shall we? You know, whenever we do one of these lists, Jeremy's always like, you should have Casey Kasem, not the Vikings quarterback, the dead DJ. He always says, I should have the Casey Kasem number 5. You know what I'm talking about.
Well, yeah.
I'm too lazy to go and get that sound effect. Yeah, you're not going to get a nicely produced podcast here. So yeah, you're just going to have to deal with it.
We're just like bare bones as it can get.
But this is the top 5 list, and we've got 5 RPG cowboys that I was able to find. So here's number 5, Number five. All right, here we go. It is Clay from Pokemon Black and White. Nadia, did you ever get around to playing Pokemon Black and White?
Yes, I did, although I had to look up when you said Clay. I had to look him up to remember who he was. He's like basically the Pokemon universe version of the crazy oil tycoon millionaire from The Simpsons.
Oh, Texas guy?
Yeah.
What's he called? Yeah. Oil Texas guy? Yeah. Like, yeah. I just talk in that bad accent.
Yes.
Yeah, no, Clay, yeah, he's a cowboy, because Pokemon Black is set in America-ish. It's called Unova. And,
quote-unquote.
And he is a ground-type gym leader. You had to look him up. Everybody else had to look him up, too, because let's be honest, he's not the most memorable gym leader for the most part. He does have a memorable design. Like, when you look at him, you're like, oh, yeah, yep, they're definitely going for that very cliche American cowboy kind of thing.
Yeah, they really are. And that's the first thing I noticed, because when you get cowboy stereotypes in video games, especially Japanese-produced video games, you tend to get the real sort of lean, mean-looking... Yeah, let's face it, handsome, rugged cowboy. And I'm sure Clay has his admirers, but he's definitely kind of more of the sort of billionaire, as I said, oil tycoon stereotype.
Except he's not an oil tycoon. Apparently they've perfected alternative energy in the Pokemon universe.
That
because
must be nice.
He mines, but he's not an oil tycoon.
Okay.
But yeah, he wears he doesn't just wear the cowboy hat. He wears the full getup, including the chaps.
Yeah, he has the chaps. I noticed that.
And the Pokemon that you fight the first time you meet him are Krokorok, which is like kind of this ground gator thing. I remember you saying that you kind of like him.
Is that... there's Crocodile and there's Sandile. Where does Krokorok fit in?
I don't know. He's a dark ground type. He's got like little stripes and everything. And he evolves into Crocodile.
Okay, but yeah, generally for that family of Pokemon, I adore the fact they kind of have that robber/alligator thing going on. Just let's combine.
They look like
those
they're
two
wearing
things.
Sunglasses.
I know, it's great, but no, they're supposed to be like little bandit.
I think in the anime they actually are wearing sunglasses.
And well, they're cool. That's how you know.
Because Ash has a Krokorok. In Pokemon Black and White, but he also has a Palpitoad, which is a water ground type, and he has, and this is the big one, the Excadrill, which is actually one of my favorite ones, because it looks like a mole, but it's Crash Man.
Oh, that thing. Okay, yes, you're absolutely right. That's a good description of him.
Yeah, that's all I can think of every time I see Excadrill is basically Crash Man from Mega Man 2. In the competitive game, Excadrill was kind of a nightmare because if you put him on a sand team, he had this ability called Sand Rush, which would dramatically improve his speed to the point where you would have he could pretty easily sweep your team if you were not careful.
Oh, geez.
And he's actually relatively hard to take out. Like he has reasonably good defense and that kind of thing. So Excadrill always kind of gave me a headache in the competitive game. Here he's not that hard to take out. But if you make it to the Pokemon World Tournament, his Pokemon group improves dramatically. He picks up, in addition to his Excadrill, he gets a Mamoswine, which is one of my favorites. It looks like Mamoswine. A big old mammoth.
Oh, I think I might have one of those in Pokemon Go. Or is that the wrong generation?
That's Pokemon Go. Pokemon, but I don't think the evolution has come out yet. You're thinking of Piloswine?
Oh, yeah, I have a Piloswine.
Mamoswine is the evolution of Piloswine.
Oh, okay. I can picture him now, and yeah, he is pretty cute.
I love Mamoswine. In my copy of Diamond and Pearl, I named him my Mamoswine Mafuda, which is like muffler in or like a big old scarf. So
yeah. That's cute.
There's Golurk, which is the ground ghost. I like Golurk. I wish he were better. Like he has really good attack, but he's not actually, you know, a good Pokemon. Seismitoad's a pain.
Oh, just a Goaler, because as you would know if you were reading US Gamer, I just put up a list of the best, just like five really cool ghost type Pokemon. I was looking at Golurk, and yeah, he's based on the Golem, if I'm not mistaken.
A Golem from what?
Just from Jewish myth. The idea of it being protected.
Oh. Okay, yeah, no, that makes total sense. And there's also Flygon, which is actually one of my favorites. It's a Gen 3 Dragon Ground type.
Flygon.
Which was unfortunately a little bit overshadowed by other dragons.
Yeah.
From a stat perspective, but back in his heyday in Gen 3, Gen 4, he was pretty good. But ultimately, Clay doesn't do much in the story, except at one point, this is kind of a cool moment. When you are fighting the evil team at the end, all of the gym leaders show up, including Clay.
Uh-huh.
And they help defeat they help keep the team busy while you go and confront N in Pokemon Black and White.
So. I remember that. Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Okay, number four. This is a fun one. This is from a character from a game that you probably haven't thought about in years, if at all. That is Gemini Sunrise from Sakura Taisen 5, which I might add is the only Sakura Taisen, if I recall correctly, to ever come out in North America.
Yeah.
Nadia, how familiar are you with Sakura Taisen?
I only know her from the Project Cross Zone games, and only then just, you know, kind of, since there's so many characters in those games and they're all on crack, you only kind of remember the ones you love most, like, here's Majima being represented by Phoenix Wright, sort of thing. So she kind of slid into the background, but she's very cute.
The Sakura Wars games and anime were a huge deal in the early 2000s and were kind of a import holy grail for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. They were, I guess Sakura Wars 5, you could call a combination dating sim, visual novel, and tactics RPG with mechs.
They cover all their bases, don't they?
They really do. It came out in North America in either 2009 or 2010 on the Wii and on the PS2.
Mm.
And it really flew under the radar, but I had a chance to play it at some point, and I liked it. It was fun. It had like a nice presentation. It's presented kind of like an anime or like a brief OVA with each episode ending with kind of a teaser for the next episode.
Oh, that's fun.
It's a little like Persona in that you're trying to build up your bonds with the different characters, and you have to choose the right. You're sort of negotiating with them. You have to choose one of the right, correct negotiate dialogue choices to be able to make them happy or sad or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Gemini Sunrise, if you are into redheaded girls from Texas who literally ride in on a horse, and her horse is named Larry for some reason.
What the hell kind of a name for a horse is Larry? I'm sorry, that's a little bit...
She's not very creative, okay? She's a country girl from Texas. She's coming to the big city in New York for the very first time. Maybe she likes hanging out in tree stands and drinking and shooting at deer. I don't know.
You're dabbing yourself in deer pee?
Ew.
That's what you do when you hunt, or so I'm told.
Well, speaking of pee, she's a janitor in Sakura Wars 5, actually.
Now, see, that I can relate to.
So yeah, Nadia loves to tell all of her janitor stories.
I have many great janitor stories. Many great grooming stories.
So
yeah,
so she must be your favorite, because like Gemini Sunrise and you are kind of a kind, right?
By the sounds of it, yes. I mean, we both like horses. I like horses.
But kind of like Clay, Gemini Sunrise is kind of a key example of Japan's love of taking America and heightening it to the absolute extremes. I mean, this is set in New York, so of course you've got hot dogs and Broadway and cowboys, so like a literal cowgirl riding on a horse because America.
Because that's the way it's done in America, where you just ride a horse into New York City. Well, if you're a cop,
yes,
I guess.
She's a samurai cowboy at that. I think she has a katana even.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. That's pretty great, though.
I'm not going to spoil anything with her, so you should maybe play Sakura Wars 5, but she has a dark secret, which is kind of maybe reflected in her name a little bit. I think her name is very on point.
And now that you mention it, I'm an idiot sitting here and I just realized, holy crap. Yes, a little bit on point.
In the Japanese version, by the way, this is kind of interesting. She's a tomboy. Like, she is presented as a tomboy. I look at her and I don't really see tomboy myself. But so consequently, she uses the informal masculine pronoun boku. Which is interesting. You don't usually see women using boku. Unless they're like uber tomboys.
Well, that's one way to do it, I guess.
It is one way to do it, but I like Gemini Sunrise. I hadn't thought of her in a long time, but then I was doing research for this and I was like, oh, right. Yeah, she was easily the most memorable character, I think, from Sakura Wars 5. And while I never finished it, she probably would have been the gal that I ended up dating.
Ah.
Number three. Irvin Kineas. So I think I mentioned, Nadia, that we're not really doing... some of these aren't really cowboys, and I would say that he's not really a cowboy.
He's kind of more of a cowboy cosplayer, isn't he?
He's a sharpshooter. So I guess... So that's why he wears a duster and a cowboy hat. But yeah, like he... As far as I can tell, the only... He basically likes cowboy drag.
Yeah, that sounds about right. And he's named after a region of California, isn't he?
Oh, Irvine, California. I hadn't even thought of that. Oh my god.
I think Laguna is too, but
by the way,
sure about that.
No disrespect to the people who live in Irvine. Atlas is actually in Irvine. And let's see. Atlas and Blizzard are both in Irvine, and because they're in Irvine, I will in all probability never work for them.
Do you guys have like a rivalry going on with Irvine?
Well, I live in Northern California and I kind of like it here. And Northern Californians tend to have a thing against Southern Californians. I don't have that big a thing against Southern Californians, but I'd rather, I don't know, it's freeways and strip malls and nothing of any particular interest. So standard of living is okay, I guess, but...
Well, that's okay. So there you go. You have you associate Irvin with an okay standard of living. Here you have this like sharpshooter character you associate with strip malls and okay standard of living.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing about Irvin. He's actually a bit of a fake poser. I want to say because he sees himself as being like the ultimate sharpshooter, which is why he's recruited to take down to snipe and kill. The sorceress of Galbadia, a sorcerer Edia, or something like that. But when the moment comes to pull the trigger, he chickens out. He can't do it. He freezes, Nadia.
Wow, what kind of a sharpshooter are you?
Yeah, and then finally he shoots, but of course she just blocks it with a shield. Blocks it with her shield, and it's like, okay, whatever.
That's the best response to some anime bullshit I've ever heard. Okay, whatever. Let's get on with this.
Yeah, so actually, that entire sequence where you're putting together the plot to kill the sorceress, is probably my favorite sequence in the entire game besides the battle with the gardens. To me, that's where the game really, truly gets going. Because, I don't know, like, the scenery is cool, Galbadia is interesting, there's like kind of a Mardi Gras like party going on.
Oh,
everybody's
yeah.
getting
yeah.
into position like it's Mission Impossible. And then everything goes wrong all at the same time. So it's all very stressful. And it culminates in your big first fight with Cypher. So,
oh, that's right. Yeah, I think I actually got that far in the game. Believe it or not.
So Irvin doesn't do anything cowboy-like, aside from the fact that he's a sharpshooter. Apparently he was going to wear goggles originally. But when Nomura was designing him, he just wanted to separate him from everybody else. So he decided to make him look kind of like a cowboy or something.
That sounds like something Nomura would do.
Because, I mean, Nomura, like, that's literally the reason he did it. He was just like, oh, well, this guy needs to be differentiated because his personality's not interesting enough.
Yeah, I'll give him a hat. There we go.
I know I'm really selling these people really well, but actually, Irvin was a key part of my party, usually, whenever I played Final Fantasy VIII, because I did like his design, believe it or not.
Yeah, I like his design. Whether or not he's a lamer doesn't really matter. He has a cool design.
Yeah, he had a sweet gun, cool design. He had a good Limit Break, where you would be shooting multiple blasts of like this giant laser gun or something like that.
Wow.
Because, I don't know, he's got a shotgun and it shoots laser beams. Don't ask questions. It's Final Fantasy VIII.
Well, it's kind of like Laguna's attack, Desperado, where he just kind of flings a rope into God knows where it attaches to, and he just swings around shooting his machine gun willy-nilly. So why not?
And he is one of... So one of the big plot twists in the game is, spoiler alert, he revealed... So I'm not going to spoil it, but he makes one of the big reveals in the game. Like, he is a key part of the reveal in the game. And I remember reading an essay on some Final Fantasy site in like 2000 about how brave it was when he's talking to the crowd, to the group, and sharing the stories of his youth. He shoots a basketball at a hoop, and it was talking about how brave it was that the ball doesn't go in. Like, it's a brave nice storytelling imagery. Choice, because it would have been cliche for it to actually go in. This is when we are, like, at the very height of, like, Final Fantasy is so deep. Let us analyze it to death.
It had its moments, especially the older games, in terms of, like, subtle bits of storytelling. I always appreciated the way that Final Fantasy VI, the link between Shadow and Realm, was never outright blown, even though Square Enix, they apparently intended to. But they stopped because they said, okay, we want to leave some mystery to this. And I respect them for that.
Ultimately, Irvin, much like Selphie and Quistis and Zell and the rest of the Final Fantasy characters, Final Fantasy VIII characters don't matter nearly as much as either Rinoa or Squall.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the thing with Final Fantasy VIII's background characters. It's mostly just, they're nice designs. Let's use them. And he was one of my favorite designs, so I always used him. He had a cool duster and a hat.
That's all that you really need, frankly, sometimes.
And he had one of the most memorable scenes in the game, which was completely choking when it came time to shoot the evil sorceress. Okay, so we've had three so far. We've got Clay, we've got Gemini Summarize, and we've got Irvin Kineas. So, two of which are pretty lame, but we still love them anyway. One which we do legitimately love. I love Gemini Sunrise. But this is a character who might be, like, he legitimately should be on this list because he's one of the best characters in a game that you really enjoyed, Nadia, which you were talking about last week, and that is Flint from Mother 3. So tell us, who is Flint and why is he so important?
Well, he's Lucas's father, Lucas and Klaus's father in Mother 3. And yeah, he's got the duster and he's got the hat, so okay, he passes that test. And as you pointed out, and I didn't realize this at first myself, or at least I forgot, he's a sheep farmer, so that's pretty cowboyish. So he qualifies.
Yeah, one of the, maybe the closest anybody on this list actually comes to being a cowboy. Though, interestingly, we kind of hit all of the cowboy tropes with this list. We've got a millionaire industry owner who likes to wear cowboy stuff for some reason. We have showgirl cowboy. We've got a wannabe cowboy, sharpshooter desperado guy wearing a duster. And then we have actual, I am a cowboy, except I'm a sheep herder who just wears like the hat and everything.
I am cowboy, hear me roar.
He's a working cowboy. No, he's not driving cattle across Texas, but he's working with livestock. He's a rancher.
Yeah, he's a rancher. And he actually, the one thing I would say he doesn't have is he doesn't use a gun when you use him. And unfortunately, you don't get to use him in the game nearly as much as I would like. He basically swings a big-ass 2x4 until a little bit later in the game, the second half, when you get to use him, he has like kind of a spear that's made out of the dragon tooth that was pulled out of his wife's heart. So that's kind of metal. And he is, as I mentioned, I think it was last week when we talked about Mother 3, or it was quite recently anyway, he's a difficult character too, because he shuts down after his wife and his twin son die. And he leaves Lucas to go off and adventure on his own, because Lucas has, like, nothing else. He has no one else. Although for Earthbound 64, which of course is what Mother 3 was going to be, he was the main character, and he definitely had a real cowboy look going on there, too. He had the duster, he had the hat. And I was always a little disappointed that we never got to play as more of him in Mother 3, because cowboys are cool, as we have established with this episode.
And Flint has one of the most, I want to say, memorable scenes in Mother 3.
Yeah. And again, you can like look at usgamer.net and look back on my Mother 3 retrospective, which I wrote not that long ago. He has, after his wife dies, he has a complete emotional breakdown. And this is a GBA game, and the way that the breakdown is animated is still just incredible. The amount of like actual emotion and work that went into it, it still impresses me. And like I said, in that particular write-up, you don't get to see that level of breakdown in RPG characters, especially you don't get to see the lasting damage it causes.
Maybe a key example. I would say Flint is a key example of how Mother 3, much like Earthbound, is one of those games that you think is kind of light and silly until you see somebody having a complete meltdown in front of you, this little sprite.
Yeah. God, he has a meltdown in front of his kids now that I think back to it, like, because they survived the attack, like the Drago attack that killed his wife, and she died protecting them, as far as I know. And you kind of see, like, this one NPC tries to basically hide them from the breakdown so they don't have to see it. It's just like, oh, man, that's like one of those, like, subtle touches you don't notice the first time. But when you see it the second time, it's like, oh, damn, that's just what a great choreographed scene. And, yeah, maybe it's, I guess cowboys can cry, too, can't they?
So to recap our list so far, number 5 was Clay, the gym leader who wears a 10-gallon hat and just generally looks like JR from Dallas. Gemini Sunrise, the cowgirl from Sakura Wars 5, who's also a janitor. Irvin Kineas, who is a really bad sharpshooter and just completely chokes during his moment of glory. Flint, who has one of the starkest and most moving moments of Mother 3. And the number one, number one is from Fallout New Vegas, which we recently just covered in our top 25 RPG countdown. And that would be Rose of Sharon Cassidy, which is a bit of a mouthful. But she is a companion in Fallout New Vegas, and I would definitely characterize her as a cowgirl, you know.
Yeah.
Flint is the sheep guy. Like, he's a rancher. He's working with livestock. She works with caravans, and she looks like your fairly typical cowgirl. She's wearing she wears a hat and everything. I mean, you gotta wear a hat.
She got the hat, and she got a shotgun.
Yes, she's got a hat and a big traditional shotgun and everything. Like, you look at her and you just immediately think a cowgirl. She's also really foul mouthed.
She's got a terrible mouth, and it's fantastic. And she drinks like crazy.
She also has one of the best quotes from Fallout New Vegas. In fact, I think you said that whenever Fallout New Vegas quotes pop up, invariably she's the one who's being quoted.
Yeah, she tends to. She has monopoly on a game that's actually full of great quotes. But yeah, she her quote about Long Dick Johnson should live in infamy.
Well, I wasn't gonna say Long Dick Johnson because this is a family podcast. But yes, she does refer to that among other things. Apparently, she's bi, which is pretty cool. She mentions at one point that she has been known to bed down with the ladies. Which, okay.
Why would limit your options?
I think she was one of my. She was my companion. Like, I think in Fallout New Vegas, you often meet Boone first, and Boone is from the Rangers. But he's kind of, while his story is kind of tragic because his wife was sold to slavers, he's also kind of a cipher. He doesn't talk much, doesn't have a lot to say.
Yeah, I've seen people say that they kind of stick with Boone until they meet Rose of Sharon, and they kind of ditch Boone.
Get out of here, Boone. I mean, you're trying to get this very taciturn dude to open up ultimately, but I think Rose is somewhat more interesting character. She really reflects the divide of, or the problems of the New California Republic. At one point, she kind of compares them to a dysfunctional family and is like, Well, I mean, you argue with them and you hate them and they're kind of awful, but they're also still your family and you stick with them, which, Rose, I gotta disagree with that, actually.
Yeah, I gotta say, all things considered, if someone's toxic, I cut them. If someone is toxic, I cut them out. But I appreciate her tenacity.
Yeah, that's the problem, isn't it? Is that there are a lot of very toxic families and toxic relationships out there, and this idea that you have to stick with family through thick and thin can be really devastating to a person's emotional health. Which is like kind of getting outside the point. She was making an analogy to the New California Republic. But I mean, one of the things in Fallout New Vegas is that the NCR is toxic as well in a lot of respects, especially higher up. But she has a heart problem, interestingly, and which I believe she inherits from her mother, who you meet in Fallout 2. So this is a callback to Fallout to a previous Fallout game, which Fallout New Vegas has a ton of them. And when you meet her the first time, she's very depressed and she has a drinking problem, which just feels like a very cowboy thing to find the old cowboy in the saloon who has a major drinking problem.
Yeah. Although I would say heart problems, you probably run into a few of those on a radioactive wasteland, wouldn't you?
Yeah, and she ends up dying of a heart attack if you get a particular ending in Fallout New Vegas, which is pretty grim, actually.
That's very sad. That would make me sad.
That would make me sad, too. And she finishes with a quote from The Great Gatsby. I think it's something to the effect of, "We were always going forward, but we were backward."
That's actually funny because, like, her name is a reference to The Grapes of Wrath.
Obsidian's really into literary references. They're very literary.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, I should definitely play more of their games if that's the case.
If you want your story to seem more important than it actually is, toss in a few references to The Grapes of Wrath and The Great Gatsby, and you're probably set. People go, wow,
that's
really deep.
Add a joke about Long Dick Johnson.
You know, exactly, yeah. I think just the fact that she does that endears her to a lot of people, but a lot of the quests that you're working with, you're trying to investigate why, like, her caravans are being sacked. You're trying to save her caravan company, which she's the owner of Cassidy Caravans. One of the things that's interesting about Fallout New Vegas is that even though it's ostensibly set out in the West, it goes more with Las Vegas. When I say it's set out in the West, it has a very Western vibe. You meet characters like, you meet an old-timey prospector, you meet ranchers, you meet people that you could call kind of like people who would be an extra in a Western film. But otherwise, it actually focuses a lot more on tropes from Las Vegas, I suppose.
You got a nice mix going on there.
You got a nice mix. And so she, I think, really embodies the Western aspect of Fallout New Vegas kind of the best. So, and if you want, you can also be a cowboy in Fallout New Vegas. Did you know that, Nadia?
Meaning you can put on the duster that, like the one I stole from Lucas Sims?
Oh, yeah, no, yeah, you can totally put on a duster and a hat.
He got shot on his doorstep and took his hat and his duster.
Did you?
From Fallout 3, yes.
Why would you do that?
I don't know, he was dead anyway.
That's the thing with Fallout, isn't it? It's always a case of, well, I'm just going to totally rob your body and leave you naked.
Yep, and your child's over there, but that's not my problem.
So yeah, if you want to be a cowboy, it's slightly different build from the usual, because as always in a Fallout game, sniper rifles are usually the best way to go. Somebody recommended going with the field hand outfit with the ranger gray hat, a brush gun, a lucky lever action shotgun, a bowie knife, machete, binoculars. And then with the perks, fast shot, quick draw, hand loader, gunslinger, cowboy, animal friend, home on the range, roughing it, walker instinct, toughness, that kind of thing.
Wow.
And of course, survival. So yeah, you can be totally a gunslinger. Irvin Kineas is just completely in awe of you and very jealous.
God, if Irvin had to like actually, you know, rough it, quote unquote, he'd probably cry.
Oh yeah, no, he's way too fabulous for that.
He is a very fabulous cowboy.
Yeah, that's why he's on this list. He's so fabulous.
But I agree. That's a good choice.
So obviously the characters here kind of run the gamut. I had to dig fairly deep, actually. There aren't many cowboys in the RPG space because there aren't many Westerns or cowboy-type games in the RPG space. And what do you think that is, Nadia?
There is one I can think of that we didn't get to mention. It's an indie RPG called Boot Hill Heroes. But it's a little bit of a lesser-known game. It's very cute, though, and I really enjoyed Episode 1. I haven't gotten a chance to play Episode 2 yet because it came out much later. But it's like kind of a very much a game where you're actually a young cowboy who watched his father get murdered by outlaws, and you go through, like, you know, settlements, and you ride a horse, and it's very Earthbound-inspired. You're probably not surprised to hear that, being an indie RPG and all, but it's a very cute little game, and I recommend it. But that is a good question. Given how much Japanese culture loves to kind of, like, use cowboy culture, I am surprised we don't have more cowboys in our RPGs.
Here's my pet theory.
Mm-hmm.
My pet theory is that our parents grew up watching Westerns, and they fell hard out of style after the 1970s, and as a consequence, they aren't a popular topic for video games, in general.
Yeah, that might be a good reason.
Like, Red Dead Redemption 2 will undoubtedly sell extremely well, in spite of, you know, the controversy and all of the things that are happening. I'm sure lots of people are going to be... It's going to be on plenty of Game of the Year lists and everything, but it's hard to make a really good cowboy game that people really give a damn about, because, I mean, I know that I'm kind of intrigued by the Old West aspect of it. I'm kind of intrigued by the Western, trope, the idea of the cowboys riding into the sunset and all of that stuff, the showdown at high noon. But I'm not a big fan of, like, classic Westerns or anything. A lot of them are kind of before my time, so.
Yeah, I never grew up with those. When I think cowboys, if you give me a horse and maybe a cool hat, I am set. Maybe a poncho, I kind of like those.
Yeah, I think a lot of the people who actually make video games are the kind of people who are playing Dungeons and Dragons rather than watching Westerns, rather than watching Clint Eastwood.
Exactly, yeah.
You feel lucky, Punk? Or was that... That was Dirty Harry, wasn't it?
No, that was... No,
that was totally Dirty Harry, but he was... Clint Eastwood Clint Eastwood was in a lot of Westerns. That's why Back to the Future 3... Marty McFly goes with that name.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Yeah.
I actually think Back to the Future 3 is underrated, but I guess that's a whole other podcast.
It's just Back to the Future 1 again.
Well, so is Back to the Future 2.
Yeah, they're both bad movies.
You think Back to the Future
1
was
a great film, Back to the Future 2 was a complete mess, and Back to the Future 3 just rehashed Back to the Future 1 with the same jokes. And then it's completely ridiculous by Back to the Future 3, because it's like, oh, everybody's obviously inbred. They've all been in that same city for multiple generations. You have Buford Tannen. I mean, come the F on.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. But when I had to marathon all three, I was like, oh, you know what? I think I'd rather rewatch 3 than watch 2 again.
Go ahead.
Oh, 2 really starts off great with all, like, you know, 2015 stuff. It's a lot of fun. And then it just kind of like, okay, let's follow Marty McFly again. It's like, oh, let's not.
I watched Back to the Future 2 again when the anniversary happened on 2015, when they would have supposedly shown up in the future. Yeah. And I wanted to go in being like, oh man, I love this movie. And when I came out, I was like, that was such a bad movie. It was a horrible film. The 2015 stuff is just, even for 1989, completely insane. Like, just completely ludicrous. And I know that's what they were going for.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work. It just does not work.
I know. It's fun. But yeah, I see where you're coming from, by all means.
The only things... They did get the Cubs being in the World Series. That was kind of eerie.
There you go. That was actually that was quite eerie.
Parks and Rec manages to get that right as well. It's kind of crazy, actually.
Ooh.
Though I think that was kind of the joke, was like, haha, the Cubs winning the World Series, LOL.
Yeah, well, sometimes jokes become not jokes.
Cafe 80s, they got that right as well. Like, people definitely have 80s nostalgia now, though... their idea of what 80s nostalgia would actually be turned out to be very different from the form that it ultimately took.
That's a good point. You're right. And that was the scene with Elijah Wood, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, because they were playing the arcade game.
Yes.
Which, by the way, was... What was it called? Hogan's Alley? Not Hogan's Alley.
Hogan's Alley, yeah.
Was it Hogan's Alley? No, it was the Western-themed game, right?
The Western one, yeah.
I don't know. Whatever the Western-themed Hogan's Alley was.
Marty was really good at it.
What was it? The foreshadowing of Back to the Future 3?
Yes.
Yeah. But, okay. That's enough of that. Anyway, Westerns are dumb, and that's why there aren't enough games about them. But I am looking forward to Red Dead Redemption 2, and I do enjoy the times when Japan decides that they want to make a Western character, and half the characters on this list come from games that are, like, extremely heightened versions of American culture in some way or another, which would be Earthbound, Sakura Taisen, and Pokemon Black and White. And that's why we have cowboys.
Pretty much. Got to have your hamburgers, your hot dogs, and your cowboys.
Okay, Nadia, it is time to do the mailbag from our listeners. And last week, we talked about Knights of the Old Republic. We put it on the list. And we also talked about Persona 5 and how I was back into Persona 5. And SammyJ9 says, woohoo, I knew KOTOR would make it on the list somewhere. Glad to see it. I know you have little time and it's long, but you really have to finish Persona 5, Kat. I'd love to hear your thoughts on some of the more spoilery stuff that happens the last quarter of the game, especially since that's where all I felt the game truly shine. It was downright amazing. Then again, there was a ton of great games coming out soon, and for once it looks like January or February might be a busy time for RPGs and game releases in general this year, so there isn't going to be much of a game release lull soon. Nope, there never is. There are 2 months in every game and every year in which there's an actual honest-to-God lull. And that is like May and July. That's about it.
Yeah. Yeah. The whole idea of there being like just the Christmas boom and that's all, those days are long gone.
Oh, yeah. There's tons of interesting games coming out every single month. And it feels like every summer something big hits that we're having to cover. Like this year, it was kind of Pokemon Go again and Fortnite. And last year, it was PUBG, and the year before that, it was Pokemon Go, and the year before that, it was Rocket League. Like, there's always something.
There's always something. Yeah. Something's going to surprise you.
Siggy Z Tar says, for a game that partially takes place at school, I was surprised that Persona 5 didn't feature enough school life. No festivals, no clubs, no responsibilities. I wonder if the game was ever planned to star young adults a la Persona 2. And somebody kind of pointed out that your character is a felon, so that's why they didn't really focus a ton on
no drama club
life.
For you.
Yeah, no drama club or no joining the band.
Your life is a drama club.
I'm a little sad that you didn't get to join a club or like be in student council or whatever in Persona 5. But at the same time, it was kind of a been there, done that from Persona 4. So I actually prefer the focus on the other kind of the alternative aspects of Tokyo that you normally wouldn't see.
Yeah. Did you, in Persona 4, did you join the drama club or the band?
The band.
So did I. Okay, so I
was playing the trumpet with a girl who played the clarinet and was sad.
Yeah, a little mousy girl who follows after you. She really, really wanted me, but I turned her down. I felt a little bit bad.
You monster.
Yeah, I wanted to go with Marie, and I did, and I have no regrets.
And the challenger was asking, like, when are we going to see a Persona game completely devoid of high school life / antics? I mean, so much of Persona 5 is getting outside the high school, and going into the city and meeting people of all different walks of life and tons of adults and that kind of thing. So, I mean, it kind of does, right?
Yeah, it really is. You still have, like, you take your quizzes and stuff, but once the day is over, especially after the first dungeon, you really don't hang out in school very much, which is fine with me. I'm done with school. Get me the hell away from school.
Drachmalius says, played KOTOR a few years ago and liked it, but by then I had already played Mass Effect Trilogy. It was kind of hard to go back. It was cool, but I've always heard the second one was better. Gotta play that one of these days. As I get closer to 30 and starting to really appreciate Western RPGs and their place in a larger genre, still haven't played a ton of classics. Well, I would say that Mass Effect is good, but I think KOTOR holds up better than any of them.
Interesting.
Nice guy Dion says, I would love for BioWare to go back to the roots and handle a KOTOR-style game, whether it's Star Wars or not. These days, two of the Dragon Age games are disappointing sequels, and the new Mass Effect was a major flop. But I'd also love more RPGs like Jade Empire with a unique setting and focus on different abilities like that in that one martial arts. But really, there's so many options available and do not. And we do focus almost exclusively on European fantasy. Jade Empire felt so fresh. So here's a quick take for you, Nadia. Mm-hmm. I think EA is actually in a lot of trouble.
Like, financially?
No, I think it's fine financially for now, at least. But, I mean, from a public perception, have they kind of gone past the point of no return at this point? It feels
that's
like
a very good question.
It feels like nobody cares about Battlefield 5. Nobody cares about Anthem. And it's just like there's no hype around those games.
No, there really isn't.
The discourse around Battlefield 5 is actively toxic. It just feels like... And they just seem really intent on focusing so hard on the multiplayer platform, ultimate team kind of thing, which they can monetize and keep people engaged with, but they aren't that great at it.
Yeah, I think one thing I pointed out on Twitter was that Disney basically picked them up and shook them like a naughty puppy, and I think since then they kind of peed themselves a little.
Yeah, I guess, but I don't know, like Battlefront 2, they had two gigantic flops in one year.
Yeah.
Like Mass Effect Andromeda and Battlefront 2, like a lot of studios can't survive one of those, let alone two.
No, you're right. And Anthem, as you said, like I keep forgetting that game's even coming out because I just do not hear any hype whatsoever around it. And that's a shame because I don't want BioWare to die.
I don't think anybody wants BioWare to die, but I think at this point, the best case scenario is like all of the best BioWare people get together with the doctors who, I mean, they're globetrotting at this point. One of them's brewing beer and one of them is, I don't know what the heck he's doing, but they're living their best lives. But
right.
The best case scenario is that they go and start their own studio and make the RPG that we actually want them to make.
We'll have to see. I mean,
It just seems like EA is not in on single-player games at all. And no. One of the reasons that Sony has been able to engender a lot of goodwill is, yeah, you have these platform games, but you also have these prestige games, right? I mean, you have these games like God of War and Spider-Man and Horizon Zero Dawn. And yeah, maybe they don't have a long tail, but they engender so much goodwill. EA just seems completely incapable of making them, and that's why we're never going to see another KOTOR again.
Yeah, it's really a shame.
It is a shame.
You're on to something there.
Acts of Blood God is a US Gamer podcast. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever podcasts are sold. Follow us on all the social media channels, US GamerNet. And as I already said, I'm at @_catbot. Nadia's @NadiaOxford. Nadia, we're partnering with another podcast. You should go check out Red Dead Radio, which is hosted by my friend Jared Petty. They are focused exclusively on Red Dead Redemption 2. I'm sure they'd be very interested in our cowboy RPG list.
They're probably going to be listening to it saying, what the hell? But yeah, I hope.
I think Jared actually does listen to the show, so shout out to Jared.
Hi, Jared. Yeah, I think I follow him on Twitter, so yeah.
And I think I'm going to be on Red Dead Radio next week to talk about Red Dead Redemption 2. So if you want to follow me there, you totally should. Nadia, you've been really busy. I think the favorite thing that you've written, my favorite thing you've written this week is looking back on your Mario 3 fan fiction from when you were 10.
Yes, just for a little bit of exposition there. What I did, like a crazy person, was I went back. It's basically the 30th anniversary this week of Mario 3's release in Japan. So I went back and I found the fan fiction I wrote when I was 10. And I couldn't find the whole thing because for some reason I'm missing huge chunks of it. I might have burned it in a fit of passion or something. But I just kind of put up excerpts of it. And you can kind of see what my, you could see from an early age what my problem is. Let's put it that way.
And the other thing that you wrote about was you checked out Castlevania Requiem and you were like,
Castlevania.
Headline, it's... biggest addition is a quick save feature that doesn't work properly.
Yeah, that's pretty great. What happened was I beat the first bosses in the game, which is Slogra and Gabon. They're not hard or anything, but I just kind of quick-saved after that, and I reloaded my save, and it sent me back to my first, basically to my in-game save, you know what I mean? Like my hard save. So I was like, that's not how a quick-save is supposed to work. I thought, okay, maybe it still has me, you know, maybe it still says I defeated the bosses, but no, it just sent me right back. Same thing with the Rondo of Blood. I tried the same thing, a quick-save, and it just didn't work. Good stuff.
Last thing is Jeremy Parrish returned to continue his History of RPGs feature with how Dragon Quest inspired the first console RPG boom in Japan, both for better and for worse, which he talks about a lot of the imitators that came out of the Dragon Quest's initial success, including, and I didn't know about this initially, until very recently, actually, there was actually a Gundam Dragon Quest, which looked horrible. Yes. It was just freaking, it was a ROM hack. It was just a Dragon Quest ROM hack with Gundams.
Yes, I think he might have covered that game on his one of his own shows that he does, but I remember that. Yeah, it was apparently horrible.
Oh yeah, no, it looked absolutely atrocious, and I have literally no idea why you would play it. And I like Gundam. Jeez, I love Gundam. I would never play that game. I was the box art looked kind of cute. I checked YouTube and I was like, no, what the heck is this? What God?
Does it have like the little chibi Gundams in it, as I recall?
Yeah, they have the SD Gundams, the super deformed ones, which just goes to show that like people always go back and look at classic games with rose-colored glasses. Let me tell you, there was a lot of exploitive crap back then too.
Oh God, yeah. Oh, 500%. There are so many games I would not go back and play.
All right, on that note, we'll be back next week talking about all of the RPGs still. And thanks to Nadia for joining me and talking about the top five cowboys. And we'll be back next week. Till then, happy adventuring.